No. We'll do it live! Fuck it!
So, I mean, that's super, super wealthy. But there's nicer expensive areas on the water, on the beach. I am not on the water or the beach.
I've just decided that I'm going to edit this to start it for me asking about Cape Cod. So, hey, everybody, we're at Half Guard an Hour here at HalfGuard.com. And I'm Mike Coffin here along with Matt Grady. We've been talking for a bit and it's been recording. And now you're hearing me introduce a show that's already started with a cold open. So how is it going, motherfuckers? All right, what I do to myself is, hey there, cats and kittens. Matt and I are going to be talking about UFC 200 because that's kind of an important show. It's a big one. It's probably the biggest show in the history of the known universe. Matt, how are you doing? What do you have to say about UFC 200? Carry this shit for me, please.
I'll do my best. I think it's going to be the biggest show ever. Buy rate wise, I see it doing as many buys as 100 anyway. Throwing Brock on the card would definitely put it over the top. And I think the 200 name, it's going to get people talking and do a lot of buys on its own. Then you got Cormier and Jones again, which their first fight did, I think, 800,000 and something buys on its own. So a lot of people talking about it. It should be the biggest show ever, I would think.
That's probably a fair bet. Here's a question. You take this show right now, and if you remove Brock Lesnar and Mark Hunt and replace it with McGregor and Diaz, does it do more buys?
Probably. Yes, I would say yes. What do you think?
I'm just a man asking questions right now.
Yeah. No, I think McGregor right now, I mean, it's weird with Brock because you don't know after 5 years being gone how much of an impact he's going to have on his own against Mark Hunt, who's never really been a draw to begin with. But you got to think he's worth 500,000 buys, wouldn't you? I mean, at this point, with the company as popular as it is, him coming back from WWE, bringing those fans in, you got to think he's worth 500,000 buys, I would think. And this is a 200. It's a million buy show just to begin with. So, but McGregor Diaz is going to be huge too. I mean, that's going to do over a million buys as well. The company is just super hot right now. They're firing on all cylinders. It's like you look at any of these shows, 200, 201, 202, they're all awesome cards. It's amazing how, I don't know, the cards just keep falling into place for them. It's an impressive run.
That's probably why they're going to sell for $4 billion, apparently, even though, you know, fucking Real Madrid and Barcelona are not valued at $4 billion. But magically, the UFC is, even though they don't get any of the money that, you know, NFL or anybody else does, but it's going to be $4 billion. And in a year from now, our Chinese overlords will be running the entire thing, and we'll just be watching Chinese dudes beat each other up.
Do you think $4 billion is outrageous?
Yeah. It just seems to me that they said they had like a $600 million in revenue. And
right.
That's gross. And if you figure, you know,
Profit was like 160. I saw some places.
So if the profit is 160, it's going to take them what? 10 years to just recoup the value?
More.
Yeah, more than 10 years. And it's not like it's a regular, like in NFL, you buy a franchise and you know that if you pay $500 million for the franchise, you'll sell it for at least $500 million later on. So all the money you make in between is pure profit. There's no guarantee the UFC is going to be making any it's going to be worth $4 billion 10 years from now.
Right. Or it could be worth more. I mean, there's no way to predict. 10 years ago, you wouldn't have predicted they'd be where they are now either. There's no way to really tell how it'll go out. I mean, obviously they want to get into Asia, into the Chinese market. Hopefully these companies who are reportedly buying the company, Dalian Wanda and Tencent, Or is it Tencent? Something like that. Anyway, those two companies are Chinese-based, and the idea is hopefully this can get expansion into Asia, which would be another revenue source. And then the TV deals are up, I think, in 2017. And the presumption is they're going to get even more money because the only thing that people watch and will watch the commercials during is live sports because you want to see sports live. So you sit through the commercials as opposed to watching something on DVR where you just fast forward through them. So who knows? Yeah. There's no way to predict it. I mean, in 10 years from now, maybe nobody even has a TV and you watch everything online. Who the hell knows?
That's the thing is like, yeah, in basically the only actual live sports I do watch are sports. Like that's the only thing I watch live. Even like regular TV shows like Preacher, which I kind of like I still wait 20 minutes so I can skip the commercials. And unless you're really good at integrating social media with your TV show so that like it's a dual screen experience, there's no reason to watch it live. But there's just still this part of me that thinks everybody looks at China and India and they think, oh, these are these big markets. We can make all this money if we get in there. But it has never happened.
Right.
Like I guess Hollywood has done well with some movies, but they're doing it at the expense of, you know, being legitimate and creative control. Like there's a big controversy right now with the Doctor Strange movie coming out in November where Doctor Strange is, you know, white doctor from America. He goes to he's supposed to go to Tibet, learn from a Tibetan monk and learn all of his mystical powers. And they had to change that part because the Chinese government didn't like that shit.
Wow.
And yeah, like they're really actually rewriting scripts based on the Chinese market. So maybe it will pan out in the end, but it just seems to me that there's no evidence at all that the Chinese market has ever been interested in fighting as a culture. Like the Japanese for sure, but the Chinese, like, yeah, there's a billion people, but they don't have any money. They're all poor as shit. It's like, I don't think people really understand, like, they're not like America. We're like, America, we talk, oh, we have the 1% and the 99%. No, it's like, China really has, like, the 0.00001% and everybody else. Like, 12 dudes have money and everybody else digs in the dirt and mud.
Yeah. Well, I guess the question would be, could they get a TV deal where they'd be on free TV and pull in some advertising revenue? I mean, I don't know the Chinese market really at all, so it would be silly for me to guess, but I'm assuming, because obviously there's no pay-per-view television over there. But you gotta think somebody's making money off of TV. So that there's got to be some potential revenue there. Otherwise, these Chinese companies probably wouldn't be trying to buy it.
Yeah, I mean, again, yeah, I'm sure there's something there, but, you know, China, just like everybody else, wants their own local guys. They, you know, England likes Michael Bisping winning. Brazil likes Silva and Belfort. America likes everybody else because we're awesome. unless some Chinese guy can step up and he doesn't have to be a champion, but be not just competitive, but also charismatic.
Yeah, the Yao Ming of.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They need a Yao Ming, a guy who's very good, but not great, but can be an ambassador. And there's just no, like, they've tried hard. They've had multiple seasons of The Ultimate Fighter China, which no one watched. And those guys, like, they're kind of, you know, Sancho fighters and whatever. Like, and it'll take, maybe it takes 10 years before they develop somebody. Cause I think that's about, like, the learning curve from people getting exposed to the sport and, like, all right, 10 years from now, you have a guy that's 15 years old. He watches, he goes, oh, I love this. He dedicates himself. And at 25, you have like 30 of these dudes. Well, one of them actually knows how to cut a promo and can also fight. But until that day comes, who knows what the hell is going to happen?
Yeah. Well, you wonder too, it'll be interesting. Again, there's no way to predict it because you look back at the UFC 10 years ago in 06, it was like they were just coming off the first Ultimate Fighter, and they were gaining some traction, but it was nothing like it is now. So who knows in 2026 at UFC, whatever, 400, what'll be going on?
It's funny, though, because if you look at 2006 for the UFC, And 2006 was the big 2005 Ultimate Fighter debuts. 2006 right. is when they really hit it big. And then December of 2006, they hit a million pay-per-view buys for Chuck Tito 2. And right. every single, like, that year, I remember thinking, like, you know, Tito Ortiz was so underrated because his fight with against Forrest Griffin set a UFC pay-per-view record. Fight against Ken, pay-per-view record. Fight against right. Ken on TV, TV record. Fight against right. Chuck, pay-per-view record. So, like, even in 2006, 10 years ago, they're still breaking a million. And they've inched past it here and there. But they have more or less, as a company, established themselves as, when we have somebody that's not a once-in-a-generation guy like Ronda or McGregor, we can do 1,800,000 with John Jones types. But they have not established a baseline of our non-special guys do 1.5 or 2 million buys in the same right. way. Like when you look at baseball, where baseball is always going to do a certain number of fans. Like if you're the Chicago Cubs, piece of shit team that they are, and I hate them, or the Dodgers, even worse. They're going to do so much business no matter what. And now that this year the Cubs have this incredible team. Yeah, it ticks up a little bit. And I just haven't seen the UFC have that little bit of an uptick, it seems, basically in the past 10 years. Like, it's a plateau. It's a huge plateau. It's way bigger than any other combat sport. Boxing would fucking dream of having, you know, 500,000 buys every month. But I don't know if the UFC has really had a giant, you know, bit of growth in the past 10 years.
I mean, the lesser shows, I mean, I'm just thinking anecdotally, do less than the lesser shows way back then. I mean, something, I'm trying to, like Liddell fights, like the Liddell Franklin fight, like that did, like, I think over 500,000 buys.
600, I mean, even, yeah.
Yeah, it was a big show. And at the time, like, Liddell was coming off 3 or 4 straight losses. Franklin wasn't a champ anymore. He had lost a few fights. And it was like 600,000 buys for a fight where the guys were probably like 2-6 in their last 8. It's kind of crazy to think about when you've got somebody like Mighty Mouse struggling to do 200,000 buys and he's on a 9-fight win streak, almost ready to set Anderson Silva's title defense record. But again, it's a lot of it's charisma, and it's not just winning fights, obviously. Liddell had some charisma and drawing power that Mighty Mouse just never will, no matter how well he fights.
That really just, you know, goes to expose America's bias against black midgets is really what that comes down to. Like, we have Gary Coleman. We like Gary Coleman, but, you know, Mighty Mouse is no Gary Coleman. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, Webster was good.
Yeah.
Remember him?
Oh, that's right. He was different than Gary Coleman. How the fuck are there two black midgets that were popular TV characters?
Like, in the mid-80s, too. Like, they were competing against each other. I don't know.
I feel... You know what, Black Lives Matters movement? You need to look at that shit. We had two black midgets who are more popular than any white midget except for the dude on Game of Thrones. So what does that say? America, we love black people. We have Obama and Will Smith. Anyways, oh, fuck this shit. We got to get on the topic. UFC 200. All right. UFC 200, the biggest show of all time. What we should have been talking about for the past 20 minutes or whatever the fuck it says here. You're going to lead this through, and what I'm going to do is we'll talk through a fight. You'll pick who you think is going to win, and no matter what, I'll pick the other guy just to be a dickhead contrarian. And we'll start at the bottom because this this show, like, every guy in this show is a name except for basically Enrique Marin, who's fighting Sage Northcutt, and maybe Thiago Santos, who's fighting Gegard Mousasi. And then I looked at Santos, who's on a 4-fight win streak and who's 5-2 in the UFC. It's like, holy shit. So we'll start at the very first fight, Jim Miller versus Takanori Gomi, who is still alive and fighting in 2016. You should probably say that about both guys. So what are your thoughts? Who do you have on Jim Miller versus Takanori Gomi, and why?
You know, there's two fights on the show that I think should have happened 5 years ago, and this is one of the two. I mean, both guys are getting a little long in the tooth. Everybody's got an expiration date, and I think Gomi's is coming up sooner than Miller's. So, I mean, I think Gomi hasn't looked good for a long time. I mean, Lauzon just walked through him, and Lauzon's obviously not what he used to be either. So I'm going Miller. I mean, Gomi could land a good shot and take him out, but I think the chances of that are slim.
How do you think that Miller's going to beat Gomi?
I'm guessing he'll probably take him down, and I could see it ending with a choke, maybe rear naked, something like that.
That's gonna be a tough one for me. All right, Takanori Gomi will beat Jim Miller because he has knockout power. He has a great left hook. He does keep his hands a little low, which may lull Miller into a false sense of security. Miller likes to work in the clinch. If Gomi circles away from Miller and keeps his a pure striking affair, but not in the kickboxing range, Miller may have better kicking. But Gomi will have more power in his punches, and he can clip Miller, and Miller will get dropped by Gomi in the 2 minutes and 37 seconds into the second round.
And wow.
I'm doing everything I can on this one because, yeah, you picked a good one. That's why Gomi will beat Jim Miller. And oh, also, Gomi is a really good wrestler. He'll be able to keep it on the fight, keep it on the feet. And he's also used to the big pressure of a big show, and maybe Jim Miller pees himself in the back because he's afraid of all the pressure of UFC 200.
Well, there's going to be nobody in the crowd at that point, so I don't know if that'll be an issue.
That's a good, damn good point. Fuck. All right. Gegard Mousasi and Thiago Santos, who are you going to pick?
I'm going Mousasi. Did you say Mousasi or Mousashi?
I say Mousasi.
Me too. Me too.
Because I've heard that enough, and I am a stickler for pronouncing a guy's name right. By the way, anybody ever gave me shit for saying Fedor? Listen to the last fucking fight with Fedor when he fought against Fabio Maldonado. They never said Fedor. Everybody said Fyodor. I'm right, fuckers. Anyways, so Mousasi and Santos.
I've got Mousasi. I mean, obviously Santos has been on a pretty good run. He's won 4 straight. Not against top guys though. I mean, I think he beat Bosse maybe.
His last 4 are Andy Enns, who is obviously an amazing fighter. Steve Bosse, I don't know. Elias Theodoro, and he knocked out Nate Marquardt in the first round.
Right, the Marquardt win doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot to me. Theodoro's decent. I mean, he's a good fighter. Bosse, who knows? I mean, he can knock somebody out. But, I mean, overall, I think just Mousasi's fought better guys. He's more experienced. I don't think he's been through a lot of wars where it's like he's totally shot or past his prime. I think he's still a top middleweight. I'm going Mousasi based on the striking alone. I think his stand up's really good. Some of the best in the division. I got Mousasi.
And how do you have him winning?
Decision. I know that's boring, but
fuck, that's pretty good. All right. Santos beats Mousasi because he has the ability to knock a guy out. Mousasi is too conservative. He is unwilling to engage and really let loose. He does not actually fight with his full potential. He's got like a level 10 of skill, but he only fights at a 7.5 or an 8 because he's afraid of engaging. And that fear is why he can't make it to the next level, because he doesn't want to go all out because he's afraid of getting clipped. And so he'll fight Santos, and Santos will have that legendary Brazilian pride and grit and willpower, and he will just push through and knock Mousasi out at in the first 1 minute and 34 seconds of round 3 when Mousasi gets overconfident. Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. Yeah. But yeah, that's right. And the and for the main event on the UFC Fight Pass show, which should be a main event on a Fox Sports 1 show, Diego Sanchez and Joe Lozon are actually going to fight. Holy shit. Talk about this while I make myself a drink and give a prediction and a round and a reason and a reason why.
Sure. This was the other fight I was talking about that should have probably happened 5 years ago. I mean, both guys are still in their early 30s, but I mean, Sanchez has 36 fights and so does Lozon. I mean, they're getting a little long in the tooth there too. I mean, the fighting years they both have, to me, it looks like they both slowed down significantly, over the last few fights they've had. I'm going with Diego. I see this one going to decision too. I don't think Diego's got the knockout power to knock out Lozon. I mean, he's been knocked out in the past. You know, you've got the Pettis fight he lost with that head kick and some other tough fights over the years. Diego never knocks anybody out. So I see Diego by decision, just by grinding it out. Just doing what he does. Keep moving forward. That's what I got.
So basically, you know, Diego, just kind of like, grinding away.
Grinds it out, yeah.
With the cage and some takedown to control and that.
And yeah, I don't even know if he'll take him down. I feel like he's kind of moved away from that. The wrestling game. He just wants to brawl, but I don't know that he's got the power to knock out Lozon. Lozon did not look good in his last fight either, with Evan Dunham, I think. He looks slow and just not there. So I'm kind of basing it on that. I mean, I think both guys are coming off losses. Diego might have been, when he moved down to 45, right? Was that Lamas? Was that his last fight?
Joe Lozon did lose his last fight to Dunham, like you just said. And Diego, according to Wikipedia, which is never wrong, won his last fight.
Oh, Jim Miller.
Jim Miller. Yeah, you got a better computer than I do. So, yeah.
Yeah, he won by decision, yeah. But that was a close fight, too. I mean, there's going to be some blood. There's going to be blood spilled. It's going to be a brawl. But I feel like a lot of times Diego just has the heart and just wills himself through it just by being a maniac, being Diego Sanchez.
That's – All right. Joe Lozon will win because he never tried to go to 145. He is not. He never screwed with his body. He has always been what he is, and he's smarter than Diego for sure. And Diego can get emotionally drawn into things. Lozon is smart enough to know what will happen. It will be composed throughout. He'll be able to bait Diego into a brawl and then take him down and probably not control him a lot, but just I think they'll be even on the feet because Diego has that very awkward style when he's fighting standing, which it just doesn't work. And Lozon has heavy hands, and he'll use takedowns here and there to win. And both guys will get cut is my real big prediction. Both guys will bleed everywhere. I really hope they have all their shots and that all the tests come back negative or positive, whichever way it should be.
And hopefully they've got some plasma backstage to replace the blood they lose.
Yeah, I feel very confident in saying that. When people buy the pay-per-view to UFC 200 and they turn it on and they see the first shot of the octagon, there will be a giant smear of blood of two dudes mixed blood together. Maybe they're the same blood type, but if not, they'll create a new blood type of type UFC. Ha ha ha, what a bad joke. But yeah, Lozon wins by decision. No, he wins by doctor stoppage after cut because Diego cuts a lot. So
wow.
Yeah.
Left eyebrow or right?
Right, because Lozon will hit him with a left hook.
Okay.
And he'll hit him with a left hook in the middle of the second round. If I fucking get any of these right, everybody, fuck you, I'm a god. So
it's even better because these aren't even really your picks.
Yes, they are. Okay. Anyways, kicking off Fox Sports 1 is a puppy dog. And I'm the only person ever called Sage Northcutt a fucking golden retriever, but it's accurate. Sage Northcutt faces Enrique Marin. Who are you going to pick? I heard you type it in your fucking computer too. I know you're like, I don't know what the fuck's going on with this fight. Who are these guys? So.
No, I know who Sage Northcutt is, obviously. He's a huge star. Marin's got one fight in the UFC, really? And he lost.
Oh, yeah.
To a guy I don't really know either, Eric Montano. It was a split decision, went three rounds. This is tough. He's never. I gotta go with Sage.
You're cheating. You're using a computer to cheat. This isn't fair.
I'm not cheating. I'm not looking at odds or anything. I promise you, I'm not doing that. I was looking at Marin. The one thing I do like about Marin is his nickname. It's Wasabi. I don't understand why his nickname would be Wasabi. He must like sushi or something, but I think he's from Spain. There's something going on there. I want to know more about that. But I'm going to go with Sage.
He's hot to the touch is what it is.
Yeah. He lost his last fight because of strep throat. He'll be healthy this time. He's going to win, by TKO first round. That's what I got.
All right, Marin wins because Sage Northcutt is a bitch. He tapped out from a submission that I have never seen a single person ever tap out from.
He had strep throat.
Oh, yeah. Trust me.
And he was fighting out of his weight division.
I've been rolling with people for years. I've been in that position. That is a setup for that arm triangle choke. Nobody gets choked from that shit. Unless you're a bitch. That means Sage Northcutt has no heart. He's a pretty boy. He's a 19-year-old who never had any adversity in life. And when he had any challenge, he quit. Marin is... he grew up poor, I think. Yeah, he was really poor growing up. And so he knew what it's like to like to go through life and scrap and eat garbage.
And wasabi.
Exactly.
It was wasabi.
All he ever had was garbage, and he put wasabi on it. I think wasabi is a sauce. It is now.
It's horseradish. Japanese horseradish. It's the green stuff if you ever get sushi.
Oh, that's fucking disgusting.
It's spicy. It's hot.
Why the fuck is your nickname be horseradish? Oh,
I don't know. That's what I'm saying. It's weird, too, because he's from Spain. I gotta research that.
Either way, like, that just proves how tough he is. That like his nickname is strong, bitter tasting thing, and so Northcutt will lose because he's not as much of a man by decision. And
okay.
I have fucking nothing on this. Fuck. All right, next fight: TJ Dillashaw and Rafael Sunsell. Ooh,
this is a good fight.
This should be a fucking main event on any show. Like. I know, like, the old, this is a main event on any show around the country, blah, blah, blah. Like, no, this is, like 6 months ago, this would have been a main event on a pay-per-view.
Yeah, maybe. If Dillashaw hadn't lost to Cruz, yeah. This is a rematch, I believe. Sunsell won the first fight by decision. Dillashaw thinks he won that fight. I always love when fighters think they won the fight, even when they lost. You got to wonder where Dillashaw's head's at. I feel like he's improved at a more rapid rate than a Sunsell. If you listen to Uriah Faber, you would think Dillashaw would lose this fight based on some of the medicine he takes.
Allegedly.
What does Faber say about him? He looks like a teenage boy who hasn't gone through puberty yet or something. Anyway, I'm going to go with the teenage boy who hasn't gone through puberty and TJ Dillashaw. I think his stand-ups, he's too quick. Sunsell's not going to be able to take him down. I got Dillashaw Dillashaw by KO in the third. He seems to like to beat up Brazilian guys later in the fights. I'm going Dillashaw by KO third.
Motherfucker. All right. Rafael. Oh, fucking A. This is tough because the Sun Tzu's been out for so long with all these injuries. They did fight before. Sun Tzu won by decision in Brazil. I had the fight for Dillashaw, but it was kind of close.
I don't remember it being like a robbery.
I don't want to say robbery, but it wasn't a good decision.
Yeah.
On the mat, Sun Tzu is better. He's got very good jiu-jitsu, especially on top, but he doesn't have the ability to control people when he's on top. And so TJ can probably scramble. On their feet, TJ obviously has the mimicry of Dominic Cruz as far as his movement is concerned. He's not as good as Dominic Cruz, but it's still better than most people. Sun Tzu tends to be very plodding. I'll throw a combination here and there of my punches, maybe a kick to keep you honest. I think Sun Tzu has a little bit more power just because he will load up. And I think he has better submissions in that. And since I know that TJ doesn't train with the legend himself, Fabio Prada, who, Fabio, I love you so much. You're an amazing guy. You're the best friend of Daniel Vanderlei, who's one of my good friends. And you left him, you dumb bastard. Even though you got Elliot Marshall, who's also actually really good, too. But Sun Tzu does have an advantage on the ground. But, Sun Tzu wins because,
poor judging.
No. Good judging. Cecil Peoples will score the leg kicks this time.
Those don't count.
He manages to create scrambles and get the back and control it for a couple minutes each round, and therefore he gets a decision by a very crowd unpleasing manner. So that's how Sun Tzu wins. We got to move away from this fight now to Johnny Henderson, Kelvin Gastelum.
This is a kind of a toss up. To me, the big question is, where's Hendricks at this point in his career? This is kind of a make or break fight for both of those guys. The winner's going to move up and be, you know, competitive in line with another win or two for a title shot. The loser's going to be out of the picture for a long time. I mean, both guys have trouble making weight. That's always fun. So we'll see if this fight might not even happen.
Oh, no.
God only knows if one faints trying to weigh in what happens.
They should fight at 185.
They could. You know, I think I want to go with Gastelum. Just off of Hendricks' last couple fights, he's taken a lot of damage. He's gone, you know, a decision with Condit, decision with St. Pierre, decision with Lawler, decision with Lawler. Decision with Matt Brown, then got KO'd by Stephen Thompson. Like, he's taken some damage, man, over the last, you know, five or six fights. Major damage. He had that streak where he was knocking everybody out, but he's been getting roughed up lately. Even in the fights he wins, he takes a lot of damage. Gastelum's younger. He's probably got more upside at this point in his career. He's got good wrestling. Obviously, he doesn't have the pedigree Hendricks does, but I kind of feel like Gastelum's on the way up and Hendricks is on the way down. Gastelum hasn't fought in a while. He lost that fight to Magny by split decision, but Magny's solid. I'm going to go with Gastelum decision. Hendricks, I could see Hendricks hitting that punch and knocking him out and swarming him and finishing the fight, but, I think it's a change in the guard here. I'm going Gastelum decision.
Finally, a fight where like I can have a decent argument. Johnny Hendricks wins because he's better in every single area of the game. He is worlds better as a wrestler, and he is a better striker. He has more power than Kelvin has, and even if he doesn't want to use that power, if Johnny Hendricks who does not have distraction of the restaurant, which failed, which you wrote about why it failed. So now we don't have to worry about his fat ass in a restaurant. If he just wants to wrestle, there are very few people in the game that can match him wrestling-wise. And he has been at the elite level. He was toe-to-toe with George St. Pierre. He lost, but if he had won that fight, it wouldn't have been an embarrassment. If he had beaten Robbie Lawler in both fights, that would not have been wrong. The only real bad performance he had was Stephen Thompson, which is a weird type of fight. Meanwhile, Kelvin Gastelum has had issues with his weight, and for a guy that's young, who's new in his career, that's not a good sign. Hendricks at least has the excuse of, I'm experienced and I have money so I can be fat. Gastelum should be hungry and all that stuff. On the feet, I think that Hendricks just has he's just better. They're very similar fighters in that they are wrestlers first, boxers second. Nobody can kick. Nobody can submit. Like, it's true. Neither one of these.
Right, yeah.
Nobody. Like, if I guarantee you, both of us could throw better kicks than these two could. And we can't shoot a double like they can, but we could do the rest of it. And on the feet, I think that they're both – nobody boxes, really. They brawl. They throw wild, big punches. Nobody's going to be doubling up on the jab and setting things up and, you know, using lateral movement. You're not going to see Anderson Silva type shit. And in that sense, Johnny Hendricks will be able – more likely to land a big shot, and if he doesn't, he has the ability to, take Gastelum down and keep him down. And if Gastelum takes Hendricks down, Hendricks is like Dan Henderson, where if you get him down, he'll just pop right back up because he's so good at that. So Johnny Hendricks wins by decision over Kelvin Gastelum, and I fucking got one finally.
I'm thinking too, though. I could see Gastelum. The question is like, who's the stronger guy?
It's Hendricks. Hendricks. Yeah, Hendricks okay. is strong. He's got that.
I mean, if he still has it, Hendricks a couple years
fat.
Ago.
He's so yeah, fat, and
I just feel like he's been through wars, man. Like, I know he's only 32 or whatever he is. He's in his early 30s, but it's just like he's taking a beating. Gastelum's still like 24, I think. He just doesn't have the wear and tear. There's a certain point where it's like you plateau, and I think Hendricks has hit it. Is Gastelum good enough to be the guy to beat him? Maybe not. But I can see him kind of bullying Hendricks and getting him up against the cage and kind of just pressuring him against the cage and grinding it out. I can see him trying to tire him out and get on top of him up against the cage. But it's a fight. Who knows? Who knows?
There is that youth advantage that Gastelum has, where he's at that age where he can just improve in 6 months way more than Hendricks can. But you already made your pick, so it doesn't matter. We go on to the main event of the Fox Sports One card of Juliana Pena versus Kat Zingano. Who do you got?
That's a great question.
I always ask the good questions. We know this.
Yeah. There's a pattern here. You ask me who I think is going to win every fight. Kat hasn't. When was the last time Kat fought? Jesus.
I think it was Ronda, actually.
No way.
It was Ronda. February 2015, yeah.
Holy crap.
She had some injuries and shit.
Yeah, no, she's got some stuff going on in her personal life, too. There's some,
yeah.
She hasn't been on a particularly good run outside the cage either, I don't think. Wow, she hasn't fought since Ronda. Jeez. I was leaning towards Kat.
Picker.
All right, I'm going to go with Kat.
Yahoo!
And here's why. I think she hasn't fought in a while. She needs the win. She needs the paycheck. Does she want to keep doing this? If she gets a win, Ronda doesn't come back, she can be in line for a title shot. We'll go with Kat because Pena is going to gas. She's going to get tired. She might win the first round. She might even take Kat down, little ground and pound, but she's going to gas in the second and third. Kat wants it more. going cap by decision.
All right. Juliana Pena wins because she had she was a favorite going into the Ultimate Fighter. She did very well. She didn't win the show, but she beat Jessica Rucosi back in November of 2013.
Wow.
Hey, that's a big win, man. Rucosi was a big, tall bitch. She probably has not shrunk. That's true. Then she blew out her knee. She had real big problems. But since she's come back, you know, Pena beat Milana Dudieva, which is really impressive, and Jessica I. And Jessica I is not bad. Like, and
she's won one fight at 135 pounds in her entire career. One fight. And it was when, what's her name? Her ear exploded. Leslie Smith's ear exploded. That's the one fight she's ever won in her whole career at 135.
But she's...
Cat beat Misha Tate. At least we got that. On the cat bandwagon.
Payne is younger, and she trains with really good people. She's from Spokane, Washington. And everybody I know from Washington actually is a big fat loser. But still, she was arrested for disorderly conduct and being drunk in public, which means that she's a badass that, you know, holds her shit and beats people up in public. And I think the age is in Pena's favor. If she's got her head on straight, and my sources tell me that she does. What the fuck? Periscope says that nude scope? What the fuck is nude scope? I don't fucking know what nude scope. Fuck you, Periscope. Pena is younger and on a win streak, and Zingano is old, and she has children. And everybody knows that when you have children, your life is done, and nobody with a kid is ever happy, and her unhappiness will prevent her from being a good fighter. So Pena wins for that reason.
Okay.
All right. On the main card of the UFC 200 pay-per-view, and this is awesome, Travis Brown will take on a man whose name is pronounced Cain Velasquez, not Kane, you fucking racists. Cain Velasquez versus Travis Brown. Who do you got? Why? What's your deal with him?
This is a tough one, too. Obviously, both guys have been around a while. You'd have to think the best Velasquez beats the best Travis Brown. The question is, what kind of shape is Velasquez in? He's hurt a lot. I mean, he didn't fight at all in 2014, fought once in 2015, lost to Verdum. Everyone claims that was because of the elevation and he didn't have cardio, and he's known for his cardio. But he was also coming off not fighting for, you know, 18 months. He's a year out from his last fight. I am going to pick Mr. Velasquez. By TKO, first round. He's going to go out, and he is going to crush Travis Brown. I just decided. He wants to come back. He still has some fire in him. Travis Brown is Travis Brown. When he fights somebody past a certain level, usually he can't get the job done. Going Velasquez, TKO, round one.
Travis Brown wins because he beat and knocked out in the first round Gabriel Gonzaga, Alistair Overeem, and Josh Barnett, not to mention his ex-wife. Travis Brown is a that's a horrible thing to say, but he's a fucking monster. And he beat Matt Mitrione. He lost to Andre Arlovski and Fabricio Werdum. That's fine. And Bigfoot, but no one cares about Bigfoot anymore. Travis Brown is just younger and healthier, and he has Ronda Rousey in his corner, And that's really awesome because it gives him vagina powers, and Velasquez doesn't have those powers. And so Brown has the power of vagina and dirtball Armenians who he's probably training with in West Hollywood. But more than that, he's big. He's bigger than Velasquez. He's healthier. He has more knockout striking ability. His knees and elbows in particular. Velasquez is a volume fighter. He's a heavyweight Frankie Edgar. And at heavyweight, that's okay, but you can get caught by a guy who can hit real hard. And Brown's a big athletic heavyweight, and he will land a knee in the inside from a clinch and drop the man with the racist tattoo sometime in the second round. And that's why Travis Brown wins, and I got nothing else on that one. Jose Aldo and Frankie Edgar! Let's go with that one! Yeah, okay.
I got, we'll make this short and sweet. I've got Edgar.
Fuck! Fuck! Damn it, the hell!
I haven't looked at any odds for any of these fights, and a lot of times I do. But I just feel like Edgar has the answer in this fight.
Oh my God, you're fired. You can't.
Because,
oh
here,
my gosh.
Come on. Here's the thing. They fought before. The first fight was close. It was competitive. It wasn't like Aldo blew the doors off of him. And Edgar's hot, man. He's on a run where he's knocking guys out and just looks great. And I think he wants that McGregor fight bad. He's been fighting a long time. He doesn't have that huge payday. I mean, his main evented shows, but it's shows against Benson Henderson and guys where it didn't draw that well. He wants that fight. He's hungry. Aldo's coming off the biggest payday of his life. And I wonder if he's just shaken from that McGregor loss. I mean, that was tough. I mean, that was the biggest fight of Aldo's career. And it's like he wasn't even – he got knocked out in 13 seconds. Sometimes that can be devastating to a fighter where they just don't ever recover from it. He'll still be good. He'll still be a great elite fighter. He's still in the prime sort of his career. He's still young. But I think Edgar's just hungrier. He wants that McGregor fight, and he's got to win this fight to do it. And he's just the hotter fighter right now. How's he going to win?
Oh, there's only one fucking answer with the Frank Edgar fight. You know what it is.
You're saying decision?
Oh.
You're going to just, I don't know. I mean, he knocked out Mendez.
Oh, this is five rounds too. Shit.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
Cause it's for the interim title. Yeah.
Yeah.
God, I don't want to watch them fight for five rounds though. we're going to say Edgar fourth round. KO. Right hook. Aldo's going to overcommit because he's lost the first couple of rounds. He's going to be desperate.
All right. This one, damn it. The loss back in December hurt Jose Aldo, no doubt. But if it had been any other kind of loss, it would have hurt more. Losing by one punch in the first 13 seconds is the kind of thing that a fighter can mentally say, total fluke, I don't have to worry about that. I can go back to doing what I did before, and I will be fine. And, and Jose Aldo can do that, and what he was before that was the greatest fighter on the planet. No one can take him down, and no one can hang with him striking. On the ground, he is a legitimate world-class grappler. And on the feet, he has the ability to box with you and to kick with anybody. He fights at a relaxed pace, and he is one of the few people that has the kryptonite for Frankie Edgar, because Frankie Edgar is amazing at boxing, amazing at wrestling. He can seamlessly transition between the two, but the one thing that Jose has is kicks, and he could chop down Frankie Edgar, and therefore, not only does it affect Frankie's ability to shoot, it affects Frankie's ability to land harder punches. But it also controls the distance, and that keeps Frankie, even if it's only a half a foot outside of where he wants to be, that makes all the difference when Frankie wants to shoot or come in with a left hook, and Aldo is just a little bit outside of all that. The fight will take place primarily on the feet. They will not go to the ground. If they're on the ground, they'll spring right back up. Unless it's in the later rounds and Aldo holds on a la Mark Hominick. But I think he'll be in shape for this. And on the feet, Aldo will do just enough, I think, to win each round. In particular because when he hits somebody, his strikes seem more impressive. And I have a theory that judges respond to the more spectacular and, you know, loud sounding strike than they do volume. So if you land 5 big punches, even if they don't really hurt the other guy, and the other guy hits you 100 times, the judges remember the big ones. And Aldo will land those big kicks, maybe a big hook, and it will seem like he's doing better than Frankie Edgar, and therefore Jose Aldo will win. He will win by decision, because you do not finish Frankie Edgar ever. But Jose Aldo wins by decision.
Fair enough.
And then we have the fight where the UFC is potentially burning millions and millions of dollars. And for the UFC 135-pound women's bantamweight championship, Misha Tate takes on Amanda Nunes. Go for it.
I'm going with Tate. We should have scripted this better.
No, it's better this way. It's more challenging.
All right. Good. I'm going with Tate. I think she's just fought better fighters. She's more experienced. She's more well-rounded. Nunez, I don't even know why she got the title shot, to be honest. I mean, she's coming off a decision win over Valentina Shevchenko.
That's impressive, yeah.
Her biggest win is the McMahon fight, but McMahon's hit or miss. And then, I mean, she lost to Sarah D'Elio.
That's an impressive broad, yeah.
I'm just going with Tate based on experience. Her grit usually comes through. This is 5 rounds too. Another title fight. 3 title fights on this show.
Yeah.
You don't get that too often. Can she finish her? Why not? I don't know. She's going to win by rear naked choke. 2 rear naked chokes in a row. Nunez will gas. She'll get it in the 4th round. Tate, RNC, round 4.
Yeah, that fucking gassing is a problem. All right. Pena will win because she's really, really good for 5 minutes and maybe even 10 minutes, and then she tends to fade. So all that really means is that, because again, remember she fought Kat Zingano. She beat the shit out of Kat for 10 minutes, almost right, like 10-9, 10-8 level beating. She just gassed. Now that she has a title on the horizon, she has the money to get the good drugs and hide things from people. And so she'll be in better shape, and she'll be able to have 3 solid rounds. She will win the first 3 rounds, all of them by 10-9. The 3rd round will be kind of close. It'll be the round where everyone is like, oh, it's a little controversial. I don't really know if she really won that round, but she will win it in the judges' eyes. She will lose rounds 4 and 5 convincingly, but not 10-8. And therefore, Amanda Nunes will win the title 48-47, you know, 3 rounds to 2. It'll be and everybody will talk about it, and they will say it's a robbery. But she will win those early rounds because Misha will also, I think, bank on having more cardio. So she won't really worry about losing the early rounds. She'll be happy to like give away round 1, maybe round 2. She'll think, "Oh, I'm wearing her out. I'm wearing her out." She'll accept takedowns. She won't fight as hard. She'll think that, you know, even she loses a round, she still won the fight and such. And then Nunez will hold on and win the fight by decision, and everybody will cry robbery, and people that bet money on it will not. So that's the best I've got for Amanda Nunez.
I like the prediction of a robbery.
Yeah. somebody's got to fucking go with it. And the semi-main event, although for the first time, because I have this fucking thing about people saying co-main event, because it's not a fucking co-main event, motherfuckers. Co-main event means equal, but this is an actual co-main event. Brock Lesnar versus Mark Hunt, 3 rounds, no title, just the idea that Brock fucking Lesnar, the beast himself, although as Dan Severn said, and everybody will hear or will have heard, Dan Severn said he could beat Brock Lesnar. Ooh-hoo-hoo!
Now?
In their prime.
I was gonna say.
Dan's not that. Dan's very realistic about who he is as a person. Lesnar versus Mark Hunt. Who do you got and why?
I've got Lesnar. I know that's a lot of people think that's crazy. If you read anything online, it's like everybody's picking Hunt. And to a degree, I get it. Hunt's the more active fighter. Brock hasn't fought in 5 years. The last time Brock fought, he lost convincingly to Overeem. Before that, he lost to Kane. He's coming off 2 straight losses. Hasn't fought since 2011.
Cain, not Kane, Cain.
Sorry. Velasquez, I should say.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I get that argument. I get it. But I also see Brock just bum-rushing Hunt, taking him down, beating the holy hell out of him. Brock's a strong dude. He's got that wrestling background. I don't think you lose that necessarily. And I think he's been, a lot of people are like, oh, he's got a short camp. I think he's been training longer than people think. He's not dumb. He's not going to go in there on a 3-week training camp against a UFC fighter and get his ass kicked. He's not dumb like that. Granted, his striking was never good. He doesn't like to get hit. He'll run away once he gets punched in the face too hard. But I don't think Hunt is going to get that shot in because Brock's going to take him down too quick and just maul him. If Brock could do that to Frank Mir in Mir's prime at UFC 100, granted, you're talking 7 years ago. I get it.
Jeez.
He could do it to Mark Hunt now in 2016. It's not like Hunt is some spring chicken who has this incredible ground game. The fights he's won, the opponent hasn't really tried to take him down. He knocks dudes out, but that's when it's standing. It's not when he's pushed up against the cage with a single or a double. I just see Brock still having enough wrestling where he can take him down and just ground and pound him and beat him in the first round. If it goes past the first, Brock could easily gas. If Brock can't take him down, Brock's going to lose. But I think he gets a takedown and beats him in the first round.
I initially wanted to say, well, you know, Mark Hunt is younger, and then I realized he's actually older than Brock.
Yeah, a few years.
Which is just, I guess maybe it's a blessing. It's an inspiration for guys like me who think, hey, maybe I can make the big show someday if I am Samoan and can hit real hard. Mark Hunt wins because Brock Lesnar can't take a punch. When he got hit by Shane Carwin, and Carwin hit hard, but he didn't know how to hit, Brock covered up and didn't respond right. A lot of guys get hit by a punch, they know how to move, they shuffle their steps, they move laterally, they get out of the pocket. They take themselves out of danger. Brock turtled up. And he used his impressive toughness, no doubt. But he still didn't know what to do. And Mark Hunt drops people with one punch. And he's the only human being in the world that can hit you. And not just hit you, but when he hits you, he is so skilled, so knowledgeable, that he knows the fight is over before the ref does. And he walks away and nobody disputes it. The ref doesn't dispute it. The judges, the UFC, not even his own opponents dispute it. Nobody says, hey, I was still good to go. Mark Hunt hits that hard. In over 15 minutes, all he has to do is land one single punch. And Brock Lesnar has been hit by a single punch in all of his fights. When he fought Frank Mir, particularly the second time, Mir hit that weird Uriah Faber-style flying knee, and it kind of screwed with Brock a little bit. Shane Carwin obviously almost messed him up. Cain Velasquez definitely messed him up on the feet. And Hunt has shown a better sprawl than usual. And more than that, he's been active in training. Brock has been doing fake play fighting like a little girly man. And therefore, Mark Hunt lands a lead left hook when Brock tries to shoot. And he follows up with an uppercut. Brock goes down. The MMA world rejoices and says, oh, yes, our real badass Samoan motherfucker knocked out the fake pro wrestler, even though that's not really true, but it'll still be an incredible moment. And no matter what happens, though, no matter what, this fight will have everyone on the edge of their seats. Like, it's so such an impressive fight. Like, I gotta find someone else to cover UFC 200, and I know you'll be watching. Everybody I know will be fucking watching the show. Like, every fucking writer for this site will be watching. So I have to do the work. I just want to be able to watch this thing and be like, yes, let's see what's happening. This is going to be amazing.
It's going to be quick. Like, I can't imagine it going to a decision. Like, how could that be possible? You know what I mean? It's like, if Brock gets him down, I don't see Hunt getting up. I just don't. It's like, granted, it was years ago, but it's like Sean McCorkle tapped him out. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah, I know.
He has this much better takedown defense now. And granted, he probably does, but it's like Stipe took him down no problem over and over. And granted, Stipe's younger. He's in his prime. I get that. But the one thing Brock probably still has from being a farm boy in South Dakota is that wrestling. It's instinctual. I don't think he's lost so much of that. And Hunt has improved enough where Hunt can stop that takedown. And once it's on the ground, I don't see Brock letting him up. I just remembered what he did to Mir, and Mir is a lot better on the ground than Hunt will ever be. I legit think Brock will win the fight. I wasn't just saying that to troll people. I really think Brock takes it. Maybe it's because I've watched too much wrestling and I'm buying into him, F5 and everybody, but I don't know. I don't see Brock going in there to get embarrassed and just get a payday. Well, I don't think that's in his nature.
All right. I will say right here on the air, recorded live, I will go into my own pocket because, sadly, halfguarded.com doesn't make enough money. If Brock Lesnar F5s Mark Hunt, you get $1,000. $1,000. You get $10,000 if he pulls off an F5. I will find some way. I will get fat-ass Tony to put up his house or some shit for collateral. I'm just saying, if that happens, I will pay you that money, and then I will also laugh at the greatest moment in the history of UFC, and I'll never watch another fight again because nothing will ever top Brock Lesnar hitting an F5 on Mark Hunt.
Do you think Hunt would go, like, literally through the bottom of the cage? Like, fall through it? Like, the whole thing collapses?
I think it's more likely that Brock ends up throwing him over the cage, like Tank Abbott tried to do at UFC.
Yeah, like Spike Dudley and Bam Bam.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's just going to be something else. What's crazy about this show is that, again, with the main card UFC 200, Velasquez Travis Brown is two top five-ish heavyweights. Jose Aldo, Frankie Edgar, number one and two, or two and three if you count champions number one. At featherweight, we have, the best female in the world versus a very worthy contender. We have Brock Lesnar and Mark Hunt, which is like, holy shit, what an amazing fight. And the main event is John Jones and Daniel Cormier, the greatest light heavyweight of all time, who never lost a title, taking on the one guy that he actually has a legitimate beef with, does not like, cannot stand, who is also maybe, if John Jones did not exist, Daniel Cormier might be the greatest light heavyweight of all time. Right. And they're going to fight in the main event of this show. And I think some people kind of like almost don't recognize that this fight alone is history making good. Like, this is bigger than, you know, Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz is a big fight, but Nate Diaz is not the greatest lightweight ever, and he never will be. He just won't. Conor McGregor will never be the greatest lightweight ever, and is probably never going to be the greatest featherweight ever. But at UFC 200, we have a chance to see the two greatest fighters ever at a weight class who really hate each other, who are head above heels beyond everyone else in the division. There's nobody else. Rumble Johnson, Gustafson, anybody. What's his fucking name?
What are you talking about?
The Brazilian dude. Punches hard. Boxer.
Glover.
Glover Teixeira. And none of them are at the same level of John Jones and Daniel Cormier. We are truly seeing in the UFC's marquee division, the division that spawned the UFC, that created Chuck Liddell, Randy Couture, you know, Tito Ortiz, the division that made the UFC what it is today, and we have the two greatest fighters ever in that division who have fought one another in a close match before, who hate each other, and they're going to go at it, and they're both of them have a real claim to the title. Daniel Cormier, John Jones, who wins?
I'm going with Jones. And I mean, I argued a while ago that I think Jones has peaked, and I do honestly believe that. He's still the best fighter in the world, though. The thing with Jones is his head screwed on right? Is his head in the game? Is he training? What's he doing outside of the octagon? That's always the question. I watched that OSP fight. I was like, a couple of years ago, he would have mowed through OSP. Like, it wouldn't even been competitive. He broke St. Preux's arm in, I think, the third round, and he still didn't finish the fight. So, I mean, the run he went on in 2011 where he won the belt, he beat Bader, Shogun, Rampage, and Machida in one calendar year, all finishes. Like, that's the greatest run anyone has ever gone on in the history of MMA, in my opinion. Like, those guys were all pretty close to their prime, relatively, and they were all really great fighters. But since then, it's like his only finishes have been Sonnen and Belfort, two guys who he never should have been fighting anyway. They're middleweights. They got title shots out of odd circumstances. That's been decision Gustafson, decision Teixeira, decision Cormier, and decision St. Preux, which is like the most baffling fight of his career for me. It's like, He should have been able to finish that fight. St. Preux was coming in on short notice and broke his arm during the fight. Even so, all that being said, I've still got Jones. He's still better than Cormier. He's bigger. He's longer. He's younger. And I don't think he finishes them just because he doesn't finish anybody anymore. But I see him using the reach. And I remember Cormier in the first fight saying, Jones was bigger and heavier and tougher to move around than he thought. That's not going to be any different this time. If anything, Cormier is a couple years older, maybe not a couple, but a year older, and has probably lost a step at the same time. And it's on the biggest stage. You know, Jones would like to win this fight more than any other in his career, most likely, especially with the grudge aspect. So I'm going Jones by decision again. That's what I got.
All right. I'll start by saying cocaine is a hell of a drug. And I'll say again, cocaine is a hell of a drug. John Jones has been offered, he had that fucking OSP, where, yeah. Like, OSP was not a top 10 dude, but he still outclassed him. Even though he didn't finish him, he's still just way better. But Cormier has been active. He had a war with Gustafson, which, like, it's weird because both guys have had this crazy war with Alexander Gustafson where they both could have lost to him, and yet they didn't. So really the guy that should be fighting is Gustafson, I think, probably. But then he finished Anthony Johnson.
Yep.
He came back from, a little bit of pressure, namely a big punch. John Jones said recently, and I don't really give a shit what people say in interviews, having just interviewed a bunch of people, although I'm pretty sure that Magana wants my dick, I should probably edit that out. No one gives a
probably.
Fuck.
Probably.
Oh, probably. She doesn't care. She wants the attention. She likes it. Interviews.
You don't think Cormier is going to win this fight?
No, Cormier wins because he's been on the straight and narrow. He knows what John Jones has.
Okay.
When you have lost to somebody, you know what you need to change to beat that person. When you have beaten someone, you do not know what you need to change to keep beating them. And that's actually a very real thing. Like, that's something I personally experienced in my own life as a dedicated jiu-jitsu practitioner until I blew out my knee and drank a lot. There's something to be said for when you lose, you get humbled and you figure out, okay, he beat me A, B, and C. And if you're John Jones, you think, I beat him with A, B, and C. And you get into the false sense of security of, if I just do what I did last time, I win. Whereas Daniel Cormier thinks, okay, I know what worked, but more importantly, I know what didn't work. And he can improve on that area.
Yeah, I mean, I see that in the Edgar Aldo fight. I mean, that's kind of why I'm picking Edgar in that.
Exactly. You're supporting my argument for Daniel Cormier winning. Cormier will probably avoid. Oh fuck! There's so many. Just he got fucking beat everywhere in the first fight. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, he'll just get inside.
I did give Cormier one round in that fight. I can't remember if it was the first or second. But, I mean, he didn't get the doors blown off him until the fourth and fifth. I felt like he got tired.
Yeah. He'll improve his cardio. The problem is that, like, at distance, he obviously loses. In close is his best chance to get the takedown and neutralize Jones. So I think that's what he'll do. He'll use punches he will throw punches and that will raise John Jones' hands. When those hands are raised near the cage, Cormier can shoot in on a single or a double, which is his specialty as a freestyle wrestler, and can use that to either take John Jones down from a single or double leg or transition upwards to a clinch where he'll knee the knee away at the thighs of John Jones for a while to earn some points. They'll separate. He'll keep his hands up, avoid the big jab and elbow of John Jones, get in tight again, body lock, try to get behind, trip him down. Even if it's only for a little bit, he'll still earn a little bit of points. And now that Cormier has that feeling of, I'm a two-time champion, and I barely lost this guy before, and I know that he's a cokehead, I can beat him again, he will... when the fourth and fifth rounds come around, Cormier will be able to, like, look at his corner, even though I think AKA and in particular Javier Mendez are, you know, fucking shitheads. And John Jones does have the X factor of Greg Jackson, who is a fucking wizard, and I can never bet against him. Cormier will be able to dig down and say, yeah, I can do this now. And it'll be the first time in his life, because he's always been a runner-up. He's always faltered. He's always been second place in nationals. You know, he always failed to the Olympics, failed to the Worlds, all this stuff. But now right. that he knows he can do it, he'll have that ability. When it's, we'll say they split the first two rounds, he'll win round three, and he'll win round five, and Daniel Cormier will be the UFC light heavyweight champion of the world at the end of UFC 200.
Would be a good story. I mean, that would be a happy ending, I think. Be in a lot of people's minds. It's probably not going to happen, but be a
happy ending. Oh, it'll happen! Damn it, I said it. I said it'll happen. Alright, everybody. We made it through the entire card. We've been going for a long time now. You have a family. It's almost midnight. Almost 11 for you. Just to recap, you have Jim Miller, is that correct?
Miller, yep.
You have Jim Miller, I have Takanori Gomi, you have Gegard Mousasi, and I have Thiago Santos, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
You have Diego Sanchez, and I have Joe Lauzon.
Yes.
You have Sage Northcutt?
Yeah.
That's right, pick the Golden Retriever.
It might be the last time I ever pick him, but yeah, I've got him in that one.
He's a Golden Retriever, everybody. He's a puppy dog. You throw a ball and I guarantee you Sage Northcutt chases that thing around the yard. You have TJ over Rafael Assunção?
Yes, sir.
You have Kelvin Gastelum over Johnny Hendricks?
Yeah. Not confident, but yep.
Yeah. Cat Zingano over Juliana Pena?
Yes.
Cain Velasquez will beat Travis Brown, in your opinion, right?
Yep.
Frankie Edgar, the American, you jingoistic piece of shit, beats Jose Aldo?
Yeah.
Misha Tate beats Amanda Nunes?
Yes.
Again, more nationalistic bullshit pride, you racist bigot who hates Brazil, and you have Brock Lesnar beating first of all, by the way, fuck you Brazil, you guys fucking have the Olympics and your fucking harbor is filled with actual human shit, like the swimmers and the rowers and all this are afraid to do their fucking sport. They have worked for their whole lives to get the Olympics, and you have human feces in the bay of Rio de Janeiro. Like, what the fuck is wrong with you, Brazil? Like, that's horrible. Like, you're from fucking Boston area, where they had the big dig in that big hole or whatever. Like, you didn't have, like, a bunch of shit floating around the Boston Harbor or anything like that. So fuck you, Brazil. Anyways, you have Brock Lesnar over Mark Hunt.
Yeah, probably the only upset pick I've got, but yep.
And John Jones, in your opinion, beats Daniel Cormier.
Yeah. Yep.
Fucking names. Let me check. We've been going for a long fucking time. You gotta get going, don't you?
No, I mean, everybody's sleeping. I'm good. Unless you got something. How about the other two title fights on the weekend?
Yeah, that's a good one. Let's start with that,
RDA and Eddie Alvarez, right?
Eddie Alvarez faces Rafael Dos Anjos on Thursday, the whatever 7th. Oh, it's the 7th because the 6th is the 1 year anniversary of HalfGarden.com. Fucking 1 year, we went so far. If we have this kind of growth in the next, if we go from what we did last year in the first month to this year in the first month, Yeah, we're all fucking just working full time for this bullshit. Like, that would be fucking crazy. It probably won't happen. But Rafael Dos Anjos versus Eddie Alvarez. There's actually, I think, a lot of good fights in that show. But who do you have, Dos Anjos or Eddie Alvarez?
I've got Dos Anjos. I mean, the big question is, what kind of shape is Dos Anjos in? He's coming off not fighting McGregor, breaking his foot, sending out the pictures of it. But I mean, both guys, to a degree, it's a toss up, but I'm going with the champ in this case. RDA's look good. He's been beating guys pretty soundly. You look back at the Pettis fight. Actually, both guys have Pettis in common. They both beat Pettis. But Dos Anjos obviously beat him much more convincingly. Alvarez kind of used his wrestling in that fight. And I don't know if Alvarez is going to be able to use his wrestling as well. And I see Alvarez getting rocked a lot just in the course of his career. I feel like every fight he's in, he gets knocked down. And I just see Dos Anjos pulling it out. Maybe even by TKO.
All right, how do I go against this one? Eddie is a more comfortable and technical striker on their feet. They both are just boxers. Neither guy really kicks a lot, so they both just want to throw hands. Eddie can stuff Dos Anjos' takedowns. On the ground, Dos Anjos is better, but Eddie will probably just use a standard underhook to stand up from half guard, like a lot of guys do. So the fight will mostly be on the feet. On their feet, Eddie gets dropped, but he never gets finished, and he'll be able to quickly rebound. And we've seen Dos Anjos break mentally and physically. I mean, he tapped out from a jaw injury to Clay Guida. So Eddie Alvarez will control on the feet. He'll land more jabs and left hooks. The occasional straight right. I think Eddie Alvarez moves to his left a lot. And Dos Anjos has more confidence in his hands than he should, because he's really good on the ground, but he won't use it. And by the time he realizes what happens, he's already lost the fight. And Eddie Alvarez wins the decision and becomes the first man to ever hold a Bellator and UFC championship at the same time. I think that's true. I don't want to give a shit, but I'm pretty sure it's true. So, Eddie Alvarez beats Rafael Dos Anjos and becomes the new UFC lightweight champion of the world, or I should say, and new. And anyways, and the other big title fight of the weekend, which I'm really looking forward to, like, I am really excited for this, maybe more than anything else, because I love both of these women. They're both just, I don't want to sound like too much of a sexist, but Claudia Gedalia and Joanna Jędrzejczyk, they're very sexy, but not like, oh, they have big old titties and things like that. It's like their attitude, the way they carry themselves, like, you see them on TV, and just no matter what they look like, you just think, damn, these are some strong-ass women, like, I'm drawn to that. Like, I really am, like, they could put me in my place, and maybe I just need to be put in my place, which, that's an issue for another day. Angela, Magana, are you listening? Because you could do it. But I don't even, this part come before that does. Still, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, who was smart enough to one time say, they will just call me Joanna Champion, takes on Claudia Gedalia. Who do you have winning, and why?
Another tough fight. Another one I legit think could go either way. I'm leaning towards Gedalia. I think Joanna has the advantage on the feet, obviously. She's got that kickboxing background. But I just feel like Gadela wants it more. She seems hungry. I think the first fight was a toss-up too. Both of them think they won that first fight. A lot of people thought Gadela won it, and it was close. I see a title change. She gets it to the ground, and she submits Joanna via – how's she going to do it?
Vagina grab.
Is that legal?
Actually, I didn't – oh, I fucking should have asked this because I've always legitimately wondered, do low blows count for women?
If you act like they hurt, they probably do. But I don't know.
I don't know. Like, it's like...
I've never seen it.
Yeah. Like, obviously, we know as dudes, manly men that we are, you hit in the balls, you're like, oh, that hurts. But, like, I don't know if the vagina works that way. But, anyways, how does Claudia beat Joanna?
Arm triangle. Third round.
All right, good. I can make a case against this as we,
She's Brazilian. She's got the ground game. She's gonna take her down and sub her.
Oh, but I can argue that Brazilians do not have heart as a nation. We can tell this by the fact that their bays are filled with shit as the Olympics approach, and they all quit during fights. Joanna beat Claudia before, and the only thing that is different between now and then is that Joanna has gotten better at what she was bad at. Claudia has not. Claudia has not caught up to Joanna on the feet, but Joanna has been able to improve her takedown defense. On the ground, Claudia is very, very good. She could tap out some people, but she has not shown the ability to really be a scary, high-level, you know, Damian Maya like jiu-jitsu ace. We have not seen that really in women's MMA, period. And so on the ground, even if they're down there, Joanna doesn't have to worry as much as some men would. She'll be able to, again, use the underhook to get the half guard, stand up, cage walk, whatever. And on the feet, she's taller, she's longer, she knows how to pump the jab, followed up with a straight right, and she's just a little more technical. I think it goes the distance for sure. It'll be probably close. I think Claudia has more power, but it's more power because she has to have more power. She can't, technique-wise, hang with what Joanna has. So she'll land a couple shots here and there, and people go, ooh, look at those big shots. But overall, Joanna champion will emerge as the UFC's 115-pound strawweight champion of the world. This is where you talk.
Sounds plausible.
Yeah.
It's a tough fight to pick. I'm with you. I could see it going either way, no problem. I don't see either one ending it with strikes, but yeah, it'll be a good fight. It's the two best by far, but they are kind of like Cormier and Jones, just a little bit better than everybody else in that division.
Not true. Angela Magana is right there with all of them at 115 pounds. I'm not saying that just because we interviewed her and she's really awesome, but she probably should get a title fight next. Yeah, she's
in the line.
Yeah,
she's in the mix.
Hey, her best friend Beck Rawlings, who she may or may not have had sex with, will be fighting Paige VanZant here in Chicago in a couple of weeks. So, you know, we'll figure out some way to get them having sex on the show. I don't know. But, yeah. So, everybody, this has been your UFC International Fight Week, UFC 200, UFC Fight Night, Ultimate Fighter, UFC on Fight Pass. I don't know what the fuck it is. Preview. With your idiot me, Mike Coughlin, and your actual smart person, Matt Grady. I would say, Matt, do you have anything to plug? You'll just say, shit, you write it on halfguarded.com. I know last time we did your restaurant, but did anybody? I know they didn't, but did anybody come into the restaurant and plug
It's been so busy because of that. It's been wild.
Oh, yeah. Do you give people like
a... You've been giving out free appetizers left and right. It's been unbelievable.
Oh, I'm so... Oh, what's the most popular appetizer?
Jeez. I'm drawing a blank right now. We actually just changed the menu up quite a bit for the summer. I know this is really interesting. I'm trying to think what our most popular. We do a lot of seafood because we're near the water and it's a summertime place. So a lot of stuff like tuna, shrimp cocktail, that sort of stuff is always a big seller in the summer.
I all of a sudden have the overwhelming desire to do like 3 hours on what it's like to run a restaurant in Cape Cod. Cause I have like all the, like, is it like Red Lobster? Like how?
No. I mean, Red Lobster's a huge chain. That's owned by like Darden, and that they own Olive Garden, and it's this huge, like,
Hold on. Yeah. Red Lobster and Olive Garden are owned by the same people?
Yeah.
That's why I fucking love the breadsticks from Olive Garden and the fucking biscuits from Red Lobster. Son of a bitch!
Do you know, I've never been to a Red Lobster in my life. That there's none anywhere near us out here. I think we're surrounded by the water here, so you can get fresh seafood all the time. There are no Red Lobsters. Even I couldn't tell you where the closest one was.
What's really funny is that I don't like seafood, so every time I've ever been to Red Lobster, I get the steak.
Right.
Which is like the most pathetic thing ever. I go to a seafood restaurant and I order beef, so I've never had their fish, which I assume sucks, especially when like, oh, do you have the fucking fish tank with the
lobsters in it? No.
Oh,
no.
Thank goodness. Because, like, whenever I see that, I'm like, that's really morbid. Like, I don't want to see my victim before I eat it. Like, I don't want to go to, like, Buffalo Wild Wings and, like, walk out back. Like, is that the cow you want? Like, yeah. Oh, no. Not that one. That one to the right. That's the one I want. That looks like it's really tasty. Like, it just feels weird. Like, I want It's just, ugh.
Yeah, lobsters in the tank aren't really prevalent anywhere in a restaurant. I mean, every supermarket out here has them. I don't know what it is like out there, but or anywhere else for that matter. But literally every supermarket you go in around here anyways, you can buy a lobster, whether it's May, November, January, whenever. But I'm not into... personally buying a lobster and throwing it in a boiling pot of water and then breaking it down and eating it. It's a lot of work and doesn't do anything for
me.
But
if you buy a lobster, do they kill it first or do you get a live lobster?
Normally you get a live lobster. I mean, you could buy it already cooked, I suppose, but usually it's a live lobster in a tank. You bring it home in a bag. You scare your kids with it. You run around, chase everybody around the house with it while it's squirming around. You get the water boiling and you throw it in a boiling pot of water. It's not my thing.
What the fuck? What the fuck are you guys doing out there?
It's New England. Think about Maine. It's like known for lobstering. I mean,
no, it's known for fucking lighthouses, not fucking murdering lobsters. What the fuck?
I'm telling you, like, growing up, my mom had lobster traps out in the water here. She'd go out in her little rowboat, pull the traps in, get the lobsters. I mean, it was a thing. I mean, it's not as common anymore. Times change, but lobstering's a big deal around here.
You're fired, motherfucker. What the fuck?
I'm not saying I'm slaughtering lobsters. I'm not claiming that. It's a summer clam bakes. It's a thing. It exists. I swear to you. Is it any different than buying any other kind of animal?
The only animals I ever had in my life are dogs, who I got for free, and I love them. I didn't fucking take a dog home and eat it. I never bought it. I never bought a live animal, brought it home and boiled it alive.
But what's the difference between you eating a steak? Granted, you didn't kill it, but you're still eating it. Somebody else killed it for you, and you're eating it. I mean,
I don't have to be the murderer. There's a separation there.
You're an accomplice to the crime.
That, I'm an accomplice, but an accomplice is still not the murderer himself. Like,
true, you would do less time. So, is a farmer who raises cattle any worse than somebody who buys a lobster and cooks it? I mean, a lobster, like, technically, a lot of people consider it, like, they call it the cockroach of the sea. It's got eight legs and claws, and it's bug-like to a certain degree, as opposed to, like, a mammal. I'd rather, if I had to pick between killing a lobster and killing a cow, I'm killing the lobster.
Well, yeah, I would kill a non-mammal first, but, like, I never went to the fucking grocery store and was like, yeah, I like that chicken.
Right.
Oh, yeah, that looks like a there's a fucking skit on Simpsons where Mr. Burns is like, I'll take that cow. And they shoot, he goes, oh, he didn't put up enough of a fight. So he picks another one. Like,
yeah.
Like, I know that when there's no logical, rational reason to eat meat. I know that, right. I do it just because it tastes good. I could get by being a vegetarian, but I like the way it tastes, so that's why I do it. But
right.
I couldn't actually kill the animal. I need somebody else. I'm a pussy. I can't kill a fucking animal. Like, what the fuck is with you people in the Northeast? You're all monsters.
Terrible people.
Oh my gosh.
I'll be honest. I've never actually cooked a lobster myself. I've never done it. It doesn't appeal to me. And I'm a wimp to a degree too. But it's like people around here, vacationers who come to Cape Cod, want lobster rolls. Like, I can't tell you how many lobster rolls get sold. There's restaurants that almost strictly do lobster rolls. It's a thing in the summer. People want to come down here, drink some white wine, and have a lobster roll. It's a thing. I mean, I don't know.
I could say if you're eating lobster, you have a nice Riesling or something white with it. You would definitely never do a red with any kind of fish. Fish always is a white wine.
Yeah, typically. I mean, it kind of depends on the sauce and what's on the fish. But traditionally, you say white with fish and red with meat. I mean, that's the standard 101 of wine pairing. But yeah, we're way off topic.
Oh, fuck those people! I always forget that you know your wines way better than I probably do. And
I don't have a dangerous amount of wine knowledge like your friend there.
Well, my friend was my ex-wife, and then the sommelier who was at the winery I was a member at, which I haven't picked up my wines in like 7 months. But that guy was a dick.
Yeah. Anybody who says that, it's like, bottom line, it's fermented grape juice. Like, there's a lot of information. The more you learn about wine, the more you realize you don't know. There's so many regions, so many different laws. The old world versus the new world. Like, if you take France or Italy, you got to follow certain, like, rules when it comes to making the wine. You can only grow so much per acre. You can only use certain grapes. There's so much to know. And anybody who claims they know a lot about wine, I'm like, you probably don't know as much as you're saying you do. You just know more than the average person, and the average person doesn't care. They just want a glass of wine. But it's like, there's so many regions in the world and so many different grapes and so many different styles. And is it aged in oak? What kind of oak is it? it's crazy. It's crazy. And you can there's books written on just Burgundy, tiny regions of Burgundy and Bordeaux, and there's a lot of history with it. And anybody who's like acting like knowing a lot about that is like a wine snob. It's not my thing at all.
I think they all lie because, again, my ex-wife, but I dated and married her. We were together for like 4 years. We went to a winery probably once or twice a week, and it's a good winery here in Illinois, Linford Winery. Very good. They have a lot of the Washington-based wines. Washington's very good for wines, I guess. And
up and coming.
One time, like, we were talking to the people. They're like, "Hey, you want to try this? It's a $100 bottle of wine." So I'm like, "Yeah, this will probably be like the greatest wine ever." And I tried it, and I was like, "Oh, that was good, but it was not better than a $12 bottle that they normally sold." And I thought it was just weird like that. Like, why would I spend so much more for something like this? And yeah, I have had my, you know, $3 bottles of wine. They're not as good. There is a difference between 3 and 15. Between 15 and 100, I don't see it as nearly as much. And maybe if I had a more refined palate, but I'm somebody that went from like fruit wine to white wine to red wine, and I really, really like tried it all out. And right. I'm pretty sure that like if you're spending more than like $20 for a bottle of wine, you're getting ripped off.
Yeah, I mean, there's two aspects to it for me. One is, like, there's a palate to it. It's like anything. I don't like scotch. I'm not a whiskey person by any stretch. I think it's nasty. But there's $300 bottles of scotch, and somebody will pay $25 for a shot of single malt scotch that's been aged for 25 years, and they like it, and they enjoy it. And they know the difference. Some people can tell the difference in the color of the scotch if you pour the wrong one. Like, that's what they're into. And the same can be said about wine. But at the same time, price isn't always an indicator of quality. Like, if we're going to put a new wine by the glass on our menu, we buy wine from 10, 12 different distributors at the restaurant. We'll get... We've got a price range. We want a bottle that's going to cost us $8-$10, let's say. And we want a cab. So I'll call all our salespeople up. We'll get all these cabs in. We put them in brown paper bags, and we taste them and don't know what's what. What the price is, where it's from, who made it. We have no idea. Then we pick our favorite, and we see what the price is, and we hope our favorite's one of the lower-priced ones. And that's kind of how you do it. And you would be so surprised at the quality of the wine when you don't know what you're drinking. Like if you had that $10 bottle and that $100 bottle side by side, you didn't know what they were, somebody poured them blind for you and you tasted both of them, you might like the $10 bottle better. And that's okay. Maybe the $100 bottle's overpriced or it was a sucky vintage or whatever it might have been. So, I mean, to me, that's the way to taste wine. If you don't know what it is, you've got a lot better chance of getting a wine you like, because you're not influenced by the label and what somebody else is telling you.
Oh, exactly. It seems like there's probably, if I really, really wanted to and wanted to go through and do a proper tasting and everything... Yeah, I'm sure the higher, more expensive wines are a little better, but it's negligible. It doesn't really matter. And the truth is, like, after the first glass or two, you're not.
It doesn't make a difference, right?
Exactly. Like you should
There's like professional wine tasters. Like, I know that sounds like a ridiculous job. And
no, it's true though.
Job,
yeah.
But guys like Robert Parker and Wine Spectator, like that's a magazine that's known for.
Oh, I know.
tasting wines blind. And so, I mean, some people think they're paid off and they score wines. They know what they are, but they claim to be, unbiased and taste the wines blind. And some wines consistently score great scores. They're scored, you know, 50 to 100. Why? I don't know why. That's what Parker came up with, and that's pretty much the standard. And certain wines from Bordeaux, premier, like first growth Bordeaux, they'll consistently score 95 points year after year after year. And the idea is the wine taster doesn't even know what it is. And that's what affects the pricing so much. A wine gets a really good score. Collectors want to buy it. Demand goes up. The supply is the same because they've got the same amount of land. They're only going to make 1,000 cases of wine, and they got this high score. That's what affects the price. Typically, for those higher end Napa cabs, the Bordeaux, the Burgundies, the Barolos, that sort of thing. And that's what a lot of it's based on. One guy's score, can affect a lot of pricing drastically.
I think we just said enough for a second mini podcast here, actually. Just on why I don't give a shit, because it's my fucking website. Everybody, fuck you. God damn, I just want to talk about wine now. Although I'm seeing my dog is now sniffing. I see his little beagle nose, half beagle pug. You know all about puggles and how.
Yeah, not a fan.
You can't. You do have puggles though, don't you?
We have one puggle, Lucy. Yeah, she's about 10 and she's been a nightmare since day one. like all sorts of crazy stuff, like allergies. We had to get a tumor removed that cost $1,000. It's like, leave her alone for a couple hours, she chews up the pillows in the bedroom. Like, all my daughter's toys have like bite marks in them. Like, she's got dolls with no eyes. It looks like we live in like a crazy, like we've got this crazy child tearing out the eyes of all our dolls. My mom's like stitched them back in for her. The dog's a mess. She's on meds. It's crazy for the allergies. And I was making her food from scratch. I was like slow roasting pork loin for her. And I've had dogs my whole life. I grew up with dogs. This is the worst breed of dog ever.
Well, I can't say that because Mickey, who is looking at me right now, the rally pogo himself, who won not one, not two, but three World Series championships, making my dead father happy before he died, is a great pogo. But I will say, there is no other breed that both barks and bays at the same time, which is just like amazing. Woof, woof, woof. Oh, he just looked at me. When I did that right now, he just looked at me and goes, huh? What are you doing?
Lucy only does that howl when our phone rings. No other time.
Really?
And it's always when the phone rings. Like, she'll bark. Any car drives by our house, she'll bark. She'll get up on the window. She'll knock plants down and freak out. I've got one for you. Did your puggle ever have anal gland issues?
No, but my one of my.
Have you heard of that?
Oh my god! I have like, obviously everybody knows that fat ass Tony is my best friend. My longest friend, my friend Megan, who I've known since high school, like since 14, which makes me feel really old. She's a vet tech, and she is.
She's good at that.
She's been inside of my dog. That's all I can really say.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, yeah, it was a puppy thing with our puggle, but oh my god, you've never smelled anything like that until you've excreted anal gland juice from your puggle on your kitchen counter. We put on rubber gloves. One of us would distract her with some peanut butter, and my wife. Sometimes it was her who would sneak up from behind, and other times it was me. Oh, you squeeze like right outside, and literally all this like green stuff squirts out. Like it would squirt out a foot. It's like nothing. And it was like the vet said to us, they're like, well, you can do this, or you can bring her back here every 2 weeks and pay us to do it. So I'm like, oh my god, I'm not bringing the dog to the vet every 2 weeks. So, but then it stopped. After she was like two, we never had to do it again. It stopped. But it was nasty, and it smelled like dead lobster.
What's really awful is that I was talking to my friend Meg, and she just got pregnant for the second time with her she's married. She did it right, everybody.
Congratulations.
Yeah. she works at an animal hospital, so she's been moved out of the back because she can't be around the chemicals and all that shit. She's going to the front. But she talked about, like, one time where in a single afternoon, she's like, yeah, I got peed on, I got pooped on, and then somebody, some dog's anal glands excreted on me. And I'm like,
yeah.
What the fuck does that mean? Like, what do you mean anal glands excrete? Like, and then I started thinking, like, is that something I have to worry about? Because I know what comes out of my body. Like, I have three fluids. Is there a fourth one coming that I don't know about? Like, I don't want to, like, anal gland all over some doctor someday.
Our vet said it had something to do with, I'm trying to think. I think it was the pug. The pug breed has that issue. Has something to do with when, like, way back in the day when pugs were first bred, they ate, like, a lot of bones and stuff, so they had trouble passing that. So supposedly this anal gland, whatever you want to call it, liquid juice, whatever it might be, helped pass the bones. And anything they had trouble getting out after they digested it is what our vet told us. And it's like, holy crap, I did not know we signed up for this. And
then my gosh.
And it was just one just thing after another. After
just
that.
Swear, for fuck's sake. Angela Magana said fuck. You can say shit. It's okay.
Oh, what did I say? Poop?
You said crap.
Well, some of it's part having kids, too.
Oh,
I try and tone that shit down.
Oh, you're an actual adult. I forget that. Yeah.
Occasionally.
Yeah, that makes sense. Although I do think we did just get enough for a second podcast for the 1 week anniversary of HalfGuarded.com, which honestly would not have been possible without Matt being here and, essentially being my right hand man throughout most of this shit. And, I'll say publicly, Matt, you've been a godsend. I have no idea exactly how you got started with us, other than I know that you...
I think I sent you, like, a Facebook message, probably.
Yeah.
I don't even know. I think I read something you wrote on the Observer site. It might have been about GSP and BJ Penn, one of their first fights. I'm like, ah. And then I started... listening to your show on Observer too.
You poor bastard.
I think you had some argument that I just like totally disagreed with at the time. And I think I wrote to you on Facebook Messenger, arguing something. And I can't remember what it was because it was so long ago. We've had a few debates online over the years, but, I think that's what it was. It was that BJ Penn GSP article and then, something on one of the shows where I'm like, that is not right at all. I wrote to you, and you actually responded to some weird, creepy guy.
Oh.
Killing lobsters and excreting puggle anal juices on Cape Cod. And you responded, so I was like, all right. And then every once in a while I would have a question or something, and I'd pick your brain a little bit, and we'd kind of go back and forth. And that was kind of just how I got involved. And then I knew you were doing the site, and I'm like, yeah. I'll try and write something. I mean, I hadn't written much in a long time, like since college. And for me, writing is tough. I feel like I'm better at talking off the cuff. But I feel like I've kind of got a little bit better of a flow now as opposed to when I first started because I was like, oh my God, I can't even string sentences together. It took me a long time. But now I'm getting a little better, I think. But
no, you are.
It's keeping my brain active. Is how I'm looking at it.
No, you have done legitimately really good work. You have understood how the new media works, which is a blessing like beyond anybody knows. And I don't know, it's weird because like the way you talk about it is like, but I'm just a dickhead. Like, you're way more achieved in life than I am. You have like a wife and children and a house. Like, I have two dogs and a cot, but right. Like and yet in some level, like, I'm like the middle man between you and like Angela Magana and Dan Severn or whatever. And I don't know, it's weird to me because I've never thought of myself as anything but the same dumbass 18-year-old that started writing for WrestlingObserver.com, blah, blah, blah. And, like, I'm just the same guy just doing this shit, and I'm so happy to have, I'm so grateful to Tony and my fuckface brother, Brian, but Tony in particular, for having halfguarded.com, where we can all just write whatever we want. Like, you know, I had Gavin McInnes on the other day, and I know a lot of people don't like Gavin. They disagree with his politics. And then today, this is being recorded on Friday, everybody. I don't know when it comes out. But Peach Machine wrote like a scathing article about why religion sucks. And I'm like, looking at it, I'm like, I'm really proud that we have so much diverse content. You cannot go to halfguarded.com, plug, and not find different, very intelligent, well-reasoned opinions on everything. And you, more than most people, really typify that. Like, you've really embraced it. You've written so many good things and so many different varieties. You've done the, oh, 10 reasons why this guy sucks. Or, hey, this is why Johnny Hendrick's restaurant failed. And you had this incredible insight that nobody else did. And I'm reading this going, holy crap. Like, I didn't know about, you know, cost evaluation and prices and stuff like oh.
Yeah, they'll gouge you, man.
Yeah. Like, to me, I'm like, oh, his restaurant failed because the food must have sucked. I don't know. Like, I don't know. I don't know why a restaurant fails. And, again, putting this on the 1 year anniversary, I have to give my genuine thanks to you and everybody else who contributes to the site, but especially you. You've been like my right hand man, basically. You are responsible for all the shit we do on Twitter for the most part. If it's smart and funny, everybody, it's Matt, not me. If it's dumb and, you know, not spelled right, it's me.
Well, I try and do it in the half-guarded. I'm like, how would Mike phrase this? And I probably tone it down a hair, but I also know you don't care what I put up there. So I'm like, I'm trying to play a, I don't want to say play a character. Yeah, I'm the new Chael Sonnen. But I'm trying to do it in a way that it would probably be something I wouldn't post myself, but I know you would, so I'll do it.
That's very flattering to me, and also it's also kind of sad because, like, you have never approached the level that I would go to. Like, whatever, right. Whatever I tweet or post is always like, all right, I want to say A, B, and C. If I say C, that'll probably, like, really anger most people, so I'll just take that down a little bit. So, like, if I'm A and B, you're just A, which is still good, and you, like, and you're really good.
Well,
you're,
I mean, the thing I always struggle with too is like, what's the goal? Like, are we trying to be funny?
I have no idea.
Because I feel like sometimes I can be kind of funny, but, or are we trying to be serious? Because there's a part of me that wants to be kind of legit and kind of not breaking news, but having a legitimate argument or a point, as opposed to just putting up dumbass gifts that I happen to find that go with whatever the latest breaking news is. So it's like that's a little bit of a struggle because I never know ultimately what it is we're after necessarily.
It's weird because I have the same, like, every day I have the same thought because I have my own personal Twitter, which I have not used in forever. But some part of me is like, should everything be about the brand? Should we always promote the site, or should we never promote the site? Should we just do something funny? Should, like, we attract people? And, you know, obviously you see some of the private messages that we, or DMs or whatever the fuck it's called. And, you know, like, I don't know. Like, Twitter's a weird beast, and I have no idea how it works, and it's probably because we're both old, which means that, like, I mean, whatever, like, the 18-year-olds are using right now, we don't even know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, Snapchat's the big one, but you can't really use that for what we're doing. It is. I mean, there's a lot of people on Snapchat now. It's like blown up. But the thing with Twitter that sucks is there's a chance nobody ever sees anything you're posting. I mean, you can see how many people not mention it, but click on it. You can see all that data. And it's like, if you happen to post something at the right time and you get a retweet, it's like, oh, that was cool. Like that Cerrone article I did, he retweeted that.
Yeah.
And it was like, that was seen by like thousands of people. Did it necessarily drive people to the site? Not really, but, that was when it was like 2 a.m. You must have just seen it and retweeted it. But it's like other times there's good stuff and it's like you're trying to drill it into somebody and get a mention or whatever, and you don't even know if they ever saw it. Just put something up. Like I'll go on my phone and I'll check certain people, whoever, whatever, a bit, Helwani or whatever, and I'll scroll through his stuff and see if he put anything interesting down recently. But if you're not on there at the right time, you don't see anybody's stuff. If you go on Twitter right now, there's going to be nothing, for the most part, because everybody's gone to bed and the news cycle's over.
It's probably way worse for you being on the East Coast, and I'm kind of in the middle. I'm exactly in the middle, almost. But, I look at it sometimes, I'm like, well, if I tweet, like, I'll just use, Doug Stanhope, for example. Cause everybody knows I love Doug. And, if you listen to the latest, podcast that Doug did, he read my dumbass letter on the air on his own podcast, which was like, and he laughed at it, which now goes on my resume. But I'm like, well, Doug lives in It was pretty good. It was pretty fucking good letter.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of myself. But Doug lives in Arizona. So I'm like, well, if it's 8 o'clock for me, it's 6 a.m. for him. He's not awake. If I tweet at him, he's not gonna see it. So there's no point. So I try to gauge that, and I see that with other websites which people know, but I will not mention, where like they're all on the West Coast, and so they think, oh, if I get out by 3 o'clock on my time, it's like, no, that's 6 o'clock on the East Coast. You missed the entire day, and so many people like that's why I purposely will schedule posts on halfcredit.com. Visit everybody to go out at 3 a.m. because that's 9 a.m. in London, and I want to have something for the international audience, and I don't know why the fuck we're talking about all this, other than I'm just trying to, like, you know, get this thing going so we have a second show, because it's the fucking birthday anniversary of halfcredit.com. We went from 4,000 hits in the first week to last month, I think we had 170,000. I don't know why. I have no idea. We are officially now, having paid all of our debts to Tony and everybody, in the black, like by a little bit, but just like I can buy a Kit Kat, half a Kit Kat, but I'm, oh my gosh, all I want to do is pay everybody. Oh, I don't give a fuck about money. I want to give all you guys money. So happy birthday, halfcredit.com. This is a second podcast. We'll edit it and it'll be really weird sounding, but I don't care. So, we'll fucking end this now. I know. Hey, Matt, do you have anything to plug in the next week or whatever?
Go to halfguarded.com, come to Scargo Cafe in Dennis, Mass. And, thanks for having me on.
Oh, I saw you guys got a really good Facebook review in the past couple of weeks.
We get them all the time, but there was one by a guy named Mike Coughlin that was very flattering.
Yeah, what a weirdo he is, but, yeah, go to the fucking cafe. People, Matt does this for a living and he supports a family. He's good at it. Scargo Cafe at Cape Cod.
You got it.
You know it's legit, because most people in the restaurant business, was it like 70 or 90% of restaurants fail in a year?
Yeah.
So his has been going on. He's running it and it's working. And that tells you a lot. And I say this as a guy who is a creature of habit, that goes like three or four different places and that's it. If somebody closes, I'm like, well, I'm not going anywhere else now. I know what I like for a restaurant. If something's been around for a while, you know that it's fucking good. So go to Scargo Cafe in Cape Cod. If you don't go to it, all 12 of you listening, I will fucking come to your house and I will call somebody bigger and stronger than me to beat you up, and then I will pee on your face. So,
wow.
Yeah, I know. It's
strong words.
Well, you know what? I'm a big guy. I'm a strong man. So, again, Matt, thanks for doing, well, two podcasts now, even though it sounds like one for us, but it's going to be two because fuck all you motherfuckers. We're going to have fucking half-guarded hour week or whatever at halfguarded.com. And go to Scargo Cafe because it's fucking good. I can't wait to go to fucking Boston. Fucking Boston. I'm going to have a fucking wicked hard time in fucking Boston. Oh, my gosh. I'm going to be such a cock when I go there.
When are you going there? You're just saying that.
Well, eventually I'm going to go. Like
What would possibly bring you from Chicago to Boston?
I really, really, really want to go to Maine.
Okay.
Like, did you ever
go to Damon's house?
Did you ever see the TV show Haven?
No. Was that the thing Edge was in or something?
Yeah, Edge was on. It was on Sci-Fi. And
I never saw it, but
my ex-wife, she and her mom lived in the Northeast for a while. They lived in Maine.
Okay. Lot of lobster.
I have this fascination with lighthouses in the ocean.
Yeah.
And I see Maine as being different because most people see the ocean and they think of it being warm and sunny, but that's kind of like gray, overcast. It's not like it's going to be freezing, but it's you still have the season, so you understand that life changes and there's seasons and there's
sort of. Yeah, I mean, Maine's huge, but I mean, they've got mountains up there. I mean, that's ski country to a certain degree. I mean, if you're inland a little bit, I mean, Maine's cold. Maine's cold. I mean, even in the summer, the water up there is not real warm. It's up there. Up there and it's cold.
There's just something about the idea of being on a beach, not having to go in the water because salt water sucks. It's just fucking awful. Oh my gosh, it's awful. But just, I like seeing nothing but a lighthouse.
Okay.
Like there's nothing in the world but one single beacon that lets you know that you're alive and you're safe. So there's something to that area. It's different. Yeah. It's different. It's special. It's not like, you know, again, I'm in the Midwest. You go to, you know, Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, Indiana. It's all the same. Nothing changes.
Right.
But you go out to the East Coast, like Washington, D.C. is different than Maine. And it's only a couple hundred miles. You could drive there in a day, but it's totally different, and there's something about, like, I don't know, the melancholy aspect of the Northeast of New England, where it's like, yeah, it's kind of sad, but there's a beauty in the sadness, almost a tranquility to it, where you just can kind of look out and be like, you see nothingness, you see the void. And yet, the waves come in, and it reminds you that you are seeing the void, and yet the waves are the world changing, and we all move on.
So deep.
Well, I don't want to use my brain too much on this show, but I have some smart thoughts, but yeah.
You know what's funny though? Like growing up out here, it's like I don't even think about it. Do you know what I mean?
Oh,
it's like, oh, it's all relative. Like, I picture Chicago. I've been to Chicago once, and I picture it as this huge city. Granted, New York's much bigger, but,
fuck New
this
York.
mega city. And Boston's big, I mean, but it's not like Chicago by any stretch. But like, as far as the ocean goes, it's like, when you grew up with it a mile away, it's just, I want to say a part of everyday life, but like, I don't even go to the beach. Like, I could care less about going to the beach. It's hot, it's sandy, there's kids running around, you're getting sand in your sandwich, and it's like, I'd rather just stay home and hang out and be at home than go to the beach and pack up the kids and sunblock and all that. And for other people, they'll come here on vacation and drive hours and fly out here, and it's like, and maybe I'm spoiled because I grew up here and I went to the beach all the time as a kid, where I take it for granted. But you saying that, I'm like, I'm so far removed from that.
No, I know exactly what you mean, because whenever, Tony comes to Chicago or I go to Seattle, like the concept of hills is different for me than for him. Cause I always make fun of him, like, oh, you guys get like half an inch of snow and all Seattle shuts down. I'm like, you pussies. Like, in Chicago, we have like 15 inches and we still go to work. And then I realized it really became crystal clear when I went to Seattle the first time. I'm like, oh, you have real hills and mountains. And where I'm from, I imagine a 10 degree incline. And I go to where he's at, it's like 180 degree incline. I'm like, oh yeah, I understand why a half inch of snow really screws you guys up. Whereas here in the Midwest, it's like, yeah, it snows, and like, we always kind of laugh like, oh yeah, Atlanta got like a little bit of ice and everything in the state shut down. And, like, in the Midwest, we're like, yeah, whatever, like, put your fucking boots on, you pussies, like, just man up already. Right. And I think it's like the same thing. It's kind of like, you know, you're used to the ocean. You're used to like looking out at it. Whereas for me, I see an ocean and I see nothing. I see the end of the world.
You're like pre-Columbus.
Basically, yeah, I really am. Like, I am very pre-Columbus. Like, I see I think if I walk into this, nothing else exists. This is it. This is it. Nothing in the world is ever going to happen. I'm done. And it's like you're standing on the edge of the abyss. Whereas in, you know, the Midwest, it's like, yeah, I see a bunch of fucking cornfields and I know, oh yeah, 100 miles later, there's more cornfields. And then there's Iowa. And then there's, you know, Nebraska. Like, I can drive for 12 hours to see nothing but corn. Like, it's fucking corn. It's awful.
I remember flying over that part of the country.
Oh, you did not just say fly over. No.
Yeah, I went to Vegas once.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
I have not driven through Iowa.
Don't do it. Do not do it.
I would like to drive cross country at some point.
No, no, you don't. No, you don't. No, no,
no.
You think you do. What you want to do is you want to drive to Illinois, because all of Ohio.
Yeah.
Ohio is like the most beautiful place in the world to drive through. I've driven through it multiple times for UFC. They have this, especially in the fall, their leaves are just magnificent. I drove through. I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. You drive through Indiana, it's pretty beautiful. You drive through Illinois, it's like, all right, I'm kind of getting a feel. Once you get to Iowa, nothing changes.
Right.
Nothing. Like, Iowa and fucking, after that's Nebraska. I dated a chick in law school where I only dated her because she's a whore. And I went with her and her, I went to her house in Nebraska with her and her parents. And it was a nice house, but like, I didn't know if I was in Nebraska, Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota. Like, I've been to all of those places. My parents are from South Dakota. My family's from South Dakota and Minnesota. I've been to North Dakota. They're all the same. There's no reason to go to any of them. We are the flyover states for a reason. Fly the fuck over us. Land in fucking, Nevada. Drive to Colorado if you want to get some free weed or whatever. And then go to California and you're good. Like, there's nothing to see here. It's just corn and soy as far as the eye can see.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm still going to do it someday.
Oh, I know you will, because the same reason I would probably fucking do the same thing. Was like,
I mean, you want to see, I don't know, some of those national parks and, I don't know, Mount Rushmore. Like, you want to see that stuff at least once in your life, you know? I don't know when I'll ever do it or be able to take the time off and drive around the country for a month, but...
what's really...
It's on a bucket list, for sure.
What's really horrible, both of my parents are from South Dakota. We went to South Dakota every year of my life for two or three times a year. I've never been to Mount Rushmore.
Yeah.
It's fucking, for granted. It's fucking in North Dakota. It's fucking in South Dakota. Like, I never went like two more hours to the west. I'm like, no, I'll go to the fucking Empire East Mall instead and play video games. Like, there's something really wrong with me. Oh, fucking A. I know, it's almost midnight for you now, so we should cut this shit short or long.
Cut it long, yeah.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. The second fucking show Matt and I have done, because I will edit this shit into two. So I
mean, we've wrapped it up a couple times.
You know, I wrap it up a lot of times. Go to DougStanhope.com. Wait, no, that's not the right one. HalfGuarded.com. And read everything Matt does, because it's good. I guarantee you he will have something really good in the next week for UFC 200. Ahem. And we'll talk to you guys all soon enough. And Matt, again, thanks for taking time out of your Friday night while your child sleeps and your other child is in the hospital.
She's back. She's good. She's good.
Oh.
We got some ointment. She's home. We're good.
Oh, I actually feel really good about that. So, fantastic. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. And Matt, thanks for being on here. And, we'll talk to you guys all, I don't know, sometime in the future. Bye.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about. We hope you enjoy your stay.